Artlist.io.
Reason for that to feel the pressure. But like the windows make it extra. I can show my mother making a gesture. I can like the love you know I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock here on the What Are You Made Of show. Another great guest to share the ingredients that's gone into making them who they are and what they're doing. Melissa Monty's in the building. She's a transformational coach, speaker, and podcast host. After a 10-year downward spiral, she became obsessed with understanding the power of the mind and used what she learned to rebuild her life. Now, through her coaching program and popular podcast, Mind Love, I got to add something else in here, and her social media content, which is awesome. She has helped tens of thousands of people across the world give their minds a little love to think, feel, and live well. Mind Love has was named Podcast of the Year, ranks in the top 0.5% in, no, actually the 0.05%, that's even better, in over 70 countries. Sorry about that, Melissa. I don't want to shortchange you. And she's been featured in Forbes, Harper's Bazaar, and New York City Journal. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man, it's awesome, man. And I have different guests like all over the place from different genres. And these are my favorite guests, the ones that care about thinking about how the mind works and performance and elevating and reaching for potential. That's my wheelhouse. I love it. I have a lot of real estate investors on lately, and I got to get into when I'm talking to them. I'm like, so besides real estate, what else do you do? And I don't know if they like that or not, but anyway, but welcome to the show. And, you know, listen, what's the I guess my first question, let's just do this first before I go down the rabbit hole. What are you made of?
Inner power, mind, collective consciousness, divine energy, wisdom. I think I'm made of all of it. I have everything within me, and I'm here to find my fullest expression of this lifetime.
Love it. All right. So, I love that answer, and I know that that's evolved over time. And as you've gone through your journey here, cause I can relate to all the stuff. Like I said, one thing I want to point out though, that it like kind of gave me some flashbacks is one of your posts I saw. And it was like, I guess it was like celebrating sobriety or no alcohol. Right. And then it showed you like some of your pictures and videos of like when you're having fun and partying, you call it fun. Right. And I started thinking, I was like, damn, there's some good times that I've been through, but it got dark at times. And at times I felt like I couldn't control it. I was the clown of the circus, so to speak. And I was doing it for other people maybe, but I think that's why it's so dangerous. I'd love to hear you speak to this because it is so fun at first.
Yeah. And it's a whole evolution because I don't know if you've had this experience, but have you ever stepped out of something only to realize you were lying to yourself for a very long time? That's what happens with almost any big change I make. And it's like, I cling to those justifications and I thought I was having so much fun, but I can look back to a night that I thought was my most fun night. And I can also feel the darkness in that. And so it's like, what was I covering up? Was it really that fun if I was avoiding my feelings, avoiding my potential, if I wouldn't have been comfortable in that situation without alcohol, if I didn't really trust that those were real friends? Those things do not equal my idea of fun at all now. And so why was it then? Did it feel that fun? Like there's just a lot that my definitions of things evolved over time.
And are you sure it's not because like, I don't know how old you are, but you're something, you got to be over 30, but are you sure that, it's not because like we just like to like we like to go to bed earlier now, we like to wake up feeling good in the morning, like sometimes I think that, like I go to Vegas sometimes for business or Miami this and that, and I'm like ahead of time I get that old thing in my head like, oh man, I'm gonna go this place and I'm gonna stay up late, and and when I get there I'm just like 8:30 rolls around and I'm like, man, this is when I usually start to chill.
That's for sure. It could be. I also remember that feeling. I used to do a lot of party drugs and I'd be on like 3-day benders. And I thought I loved those weekends. And when I really think back, I can remember specific thought process that I was having while in it. And it's like, oh God, the Coke's going to run out. Oh God, this night's going to end. Oh God, the sun's coming up. There were so many moments of dread sprinkled in throughout that. And it was like, so we used to have this weed guy, and he was a very wise man, and he came over, and I remember when my husband was turning 30, and he's like, oh, 30, that's a good year to stop drinking. And we were like it planted a seed, and he just went on this tangent, and he's like, the thing about drinking is you have that first drink, you feel amazing. And then the second drink is just chasing the feeling you felt with the first drink. And then the third drink, you're starting to get sloppy and you're still chasing that original feeling. Then you got to mix in the water and you're still trying to get back to that, but you never really do. So your peak is only 20 minutes. Once you realize that, your whole life will change. The monologue has stuck in my head for years. And it took me like five more years to finally give up alcohol. But it was just this inner pull, and I'd play around with 30 days and I'd feel amazing, but then I'd be like, yeah, but do I want to give it up completely? Do I want to give up the chance to have that glass of wine on the top of the mountain when I'm snowboarding, or that dinner with friends? No, I'm not going to be that person. I'll just really learn to rein it in. And before I knew it, it was a third night in a row where I'd have a glass of wine at 5:30, and I'd think I was going to get stuff done, but then I really wouldn't want to. So I'd end up watching a rom-com, and then the next day I would be in the same position, and I'm like, I feel like I'm living in Groundhog's Day. Every day is a loop. And I got out of the loop when I got out of all of the mental justifications.
Yeah. Stories that we tell ourselves, right? You know, when I was a kid, so I grew up around a lot of brokenness and drug addicts, alcohol, anxiety, depression, relying on that medication, overdose on that medication, suicide. I watched all this stuff. And one thing I observed as a young kid was this: everybody was living out the story they were telling themselves.
Yes.
And they would always tell me as a kid, for some reason, they felt like they confided in me or something. I don't know why, but they were trying to justify what they were doing. And I'm like, you don't see that you're just telling this story and then you're living it out. And so I would call them out on it a lot of times. And then, you know, that led me to having to tell a story of being successful, which I did for years. And then when I was 18, I didn't drink until I was 18. When I turned 18, I went to college. And I'm sharing this so you can understand I relate to you. And I want to get into this for other people, because I want people to really start thinking about even one drink here and there. I went to 18. I saw college. I played football. But when I went to college, I came from a small town. I saw a lot more girls and parties. And then my parents weren't there. And I could stay up whenever I wanted to. And I can, you know, and it was like Disney World at first. And it started with alcohol. And then I always heard in high school, weed was a gateway drug. I'm like, ah, come on. Weed's a gateway drug. I'm just not going to do any of it. Started the weed because it was chasing that next thing, right? And then cocaine, ecstasy, mushrooms. And it's like, before you know it, I was left there, and a lot of my friends went off on their own to their jobs, or we're back home or whatever. And then, you know what? I'm left with the crowd that does that stuff. And I was probably one of the bad people that other people shouldn't have been around at that time.
Same.
And so, like, I think back at these times, and I was doing some counseling or therapy the other day. A while back, not the other day really, but a while back this last year. And I was sharing this stuff, and I wrote a book about my stuff, but I was just like, God, it makes me sick to my stomach to think that I was that kind of person. So do you ever go through that, like not regret, but just thinking about that person you were?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. I had my downward spiral was pretty bad. I ended up very severely bulimic. I ended up in a really horrible relationship. I ended up having kind of a klepto phase. Like, I would just like steal lip gloss at Walmart. And then it all culminated. I ended up in a horrible relationship with somebody who ended up, I found out like 6 months into our relationship that he was addicted to meth. He was cheating on me. He was secretly robbing houses at night. My rock bottom was landing in jail for his crime. And then spending the next 2 years figuring out how to deal with that. And if I would have taken it to court, I would have had my name cleared, because I actually went to Hawaii for a month to stay with a friend to get away from him for a while, came back, fell into the same patterns. And during that time that I was gone, he went on a whole spree, robbed like 60 houses. And it was like the Wet Bandits, where he did everything the same way, but a very smart way, to where he got no calls of like suspicious activity. But then once they figured out who it was, they could track all of his robberies. Well, there was eyewitness accounts during that time. He was cheating on me with another blonde girl. So I could have just easily proven I was in Hawaii during this time of the eyewitness accounts. But if I did that, I would have made him go to trial as well. And my attorney I paid for out of pocket wasn't the best attorney. His was like a $40,000 attorney, and mine just never showed up. So I was being counseled by his mom and his attorney. I was too afraid to bring my family into it. Long story short, I took a felony to save him from 10 years automatically in jail.
Yeah.
And so that was my rock bottom. I moved to LA to get away from him. He still tormented me for like 2 years, broke into my house.
By the way, when that
22.
Happened. Okay.
And then he got arrested for another string of robberies and he got 11 years in jail and I was finally free. And so that was when I was like, I need to turn my life around. But I was addicted to so many things. I was still bulimic. I was now living in LA. So I just was trying to forget what I had gone through partying. And when I really look at that time, there was like a 6 month window where I had no idea. Then there was like a 2 month window where I had suspicions. And then there was like a month after the arrest happened, but then he was still doing bad things. And I just like decided to love him anyways, like just decided that he was the only person who could relate to me since now we're both going through this. And I allowed things and my self-worth to be kind of trampled on, doing bad things. I look back to my klepto phase and I'm like, I attracted this. This is the universe being like, okay, here's, you think you're doing just this little dabbling. Let me punch you in the face with the worst case scenario. And so now it's something I'm thankful for, but I look at those years that I wasted, those friendships that I was not a good friend to because I couldn't be. I wasn't even a good friend to myself. How was I going to be a good friend to other people? How was I going to put other people's needs before the next shiny thing that was in front of me? And so for a long time in my growth, I had to like, I looked at that version of myself like, I don't even understand that girl. Who was she? And I had a lot of shame around it. And it wasn't until I started to embrace that girl and say, yeah, she screwed up royally. She made so many dumb mistakes. But I also realized she was hurting. She didn't understand. She did the best she could with what she knew at the time. And she was the one who took the initial steps to get me to where I am now. And that work was so much harder than the work I'm doing now, where I'm strong in myself. I have self-belief. I'm not doubting every move. I had to take those initial steps feeling completely broken and worthless. And so yes and no. I know that it's a trap to go down that rabbit hole of just feeling regret. And so I have to consciously negate those beliefs and shift what I'm feeling about myself, because that's the only way you can really reach full integration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. That's a great point because, you know, life as you're in this realm now where you're, you know, not drinking and you're focused on helping people and this and that, and you're so much more well equipped to handle these things, but could you have? Yeah. I love it. I love it. So when you decided to quit, there was also another post I noticed where you were talking about how your pet peeve of your husband's was like, he would want to go to bed and this and that. And it reminded me of like, when I said, I go to Vegas sometimes and I'm have some associates I'll meet out there and they're partying and this and that. And I'll go to bed and then I'll wake up at like 4 a.m. when I'm there. And then I'm ready to go to the gym. And then I message them and they're still out at the club. You know, and I'm like that guy. And they just know this about me now. Like I just go to bed or I just disappear, you know, but then you started to realize that. So can you tell that story for the audience?
Yeah, my husband had this level of self-awareness that I was not ready to step into. And so we'd be day drinking on a patio in Santa Monica or something. And I loved day drinking back then. Like it fueled me. Mind you, I was also on copious amounts of Adderall. So I didn't have
For those listening, like Adderall is like a prescribed cocaine in a way, right?
I mean, meth, it's
meth or whatever.
It's almost identical to meth. It literally says methamphetamines on the side. Well, I would be having my glass of wine, feeling like I was living my best life. And then my husband would just be like, yeah, I gotta be honest. I just feel a little bit more tired. I kind of want to take a nap. And I was just like, God, party pooper. Like, you're not my favorite drinking buddy. I'm calling my friend.
I get that a lot.
Girls. And so that happened for quite a while. And then came the time I wanted to actually wean myself off Adderall, which is a whole story. We were almost going to move overseas, realized this was like an anchor to me. And that was another thing I made so many excuses for. It was wrapped up in so many things. It curbed my appetite. So it was wrapped up into my eating disorder. It was wrapped up in that energy, being able to drink more, being able to party more. People wanted it. And so I had 1,000 justifications for that. I was well on my spiritual and self-healing journey, still making excuses for that. But then I just realized it was tying me to one place. I wondered who I was without it. And so that was one of the hardest things I gave up. And once I did, I could see what my husband was talking about. And so, and he planted that seed. I don't know if that awareness would have come on its own, maybe, but I definitely feel like it helps when you're around people who help you see the things you want to see instead of keeping you where you are. And so then I couldn't lie to myself anymore. I didn't feel good after that brunch glass of mimosa or bottomless mimosas or whatever. I wanted to go home and go to bed. The day was gone after that. Whereas my 20-year-old self was like, if you're not wasted, the day is. Actually just wasted the day. And so that awareness is now what drives me. I am so in touch with my body now, with my mind. And so before, where I might be feeling really dark and I'm like, oh my God, I need, like, everything's horrible. It's like, what about this day is shifted? Or what do I need? First of all, are all of my basic needs taken care of? Water, sunlight, nourishing food. Find your baseline and then figure it out. Is something speaking to me? Is it this nagging feeling that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Is it a nagging feeling that I'm stuck in a loop doing the same negative behavior that I wish I could get out of, but I'm making justification so I don't feel like a failure? What is it? And so then you can actually see what's wrong instead of just redecorating or finding the surface level fluff that's not going to ultimately make any difference.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jesse Itzler said, I heard him speak many times. One thing he really stuck with me was he started thinking about, like, when he was going out, what about tomorrow? That became a phrase of his at night, or day drinking, whatever. What about tomorrow? And so that rings, like, that's that seed that was planted with me. Like, I always think about that. Like, what about tomorrow? Because sometimes when I got to drinking, I didn't drink like all the time. When I got to a certain point, I would have a drink or two. But then sometimes when I get in a good environment like Vegas or Miami or someplace like a wedding or something, I'm like, well, it's time to turn it on. You justify it, right? It's like time to turn it on. And then I started thinking about that phrase and it changed everything for me, because I want to feel good when I wake up. I love waking up early. I love the natural high that you get with working out and knowing that you're committing to something that's making, and it just changed it. And it's wild how it does that. My face started getting, like, my complexion was better. I look, you know, everything just changed. And so, by the way, I really appreciate your vulnerability and transparency and sharing this stuff, and not just here, but in your content. So when did you start, what did you do prior to what you're doing now? Like, did you have a career in corporate? Did you, like, what did you do prior to now?
Well, I had that silly little felony. So before that, I actually did get a really good job. I dropped out of college and I got a job where I was making $60,000 a year. And for just out of college in 2007, that was great for me. Ended up moving to Texas. I loved school and I hated school. I started to see that I wanted something more targeted. I just felt like I was wasting my time. So it's not a decision that I regret, actually, to this day, but I ended up in a good job. I ended up becoming top salesperson in my district. And that was right before the downward spiral. And then I just started spiraling downward, but I always kind of felt like I could do whatever until that felony. And I realized, gosh, every job application I've ever filled out, there's like two lines where it says, have you ever gotten a felony? Explain. I'm like, how am I going to explain that story in two lines on a job application? So I realized I needed to do something else. And so I started digging into, like, black hat forums, learning marketing. I ended up designing some logos for some nonprofits, doing websites. And I tried to be an entrepreneur. I really wanted to start making passive income. But because of the knowledge that I accrued, I actually went to the Traffic and Conversion Summit back when it was still in Austin. And they used to have the Wicked Smart competition where you just share any internet marketing secret at the end. And I waited to stand on stage and I ended up winning. And I won a computer. And also it set me up for like 2 years of my freelance career. But I wasn't really mentally equipped to handle a freelance career at that time. I did not have the structure. I was still partying. But actually, one of the connections I made with partying, I ended up seeing him at that summit. We're still friends today, and his growth inspired me. But long story short, I ended up getting a job at a startup and started as the social media person, but then realized that we didn't have a product designer. And so I, like, went home Again, copious amounts of Adderall, didn't sleep for like 4 days, taught myself product design, came back with a giant poster board wireframe, got a promotion. So I was doing well in the world, but there was a point of time where I realized that I was learning all these skills to fuel somebody else's dream. And I had no idea what lit me up. I had never gone inward. Going inward actually kind of freaked me out. I remember actually saying, I don't want to be alone with my thoughts. And so it was all about distracting and numbing. And thankfully, my boss at the time was very volatile. And so he was both inspiring and kind of a friend, but then also not, we did not mesh well working together. He'd like go off, scream while you're like crying in a corner. And so when I got married, I and my husband was like, you know, every time you get off the phone with him, you snap at me. And I realized that these things that we think we can make excuses for, that we think are isolated, everything matters. All of this stuff affects your belief in yourself, your energy, how you carry yourself. And I'm like, do I want to be in a situation where I'm forced to just handle somebody's toxicity, just be blown up at? Like, this is not the life I want to live. And I had done too much work on myself at that point where the self-awareness was there. I couldn't deny it. And so that's when I decided to start reading books on finding your purpose, doing all the cheesy activities at the end of the books instead of just thinking I absorbed it just because I read it. And I really drilled down, writing down things like, what have all my jobs had in common? What have I been good at? What parts didn't I like? What do people compliment me for? Figuring out who I was and then finding those through lines. And I decided to start a podcast. And so I started that 3 months before I quit my job, but I was on fire. Like, this was the first time I felt so confident in what I was doing because I did the work to make sure it was right for me and aligned with my ideal vision of life. And within 3 months, it had already grown to the top charts. I was speaking on stages within 6 months on how to grow your podcast. And my life really changed from there. So I was able to leave my job. I started in December 2017, left my job March 2018. And the rest is history.
That's awesome. I want to get to the podcast in a second. And I want to talk about podcast growth in a second. But before I do that, something that just came up. Like, what was it like growing up? Like, what do you think caused you to have all these different thoughts and be chasing this thing? And what were you trying to escape or run from?
Oh, all sorts of things. My environment was great. I had two great parents. They got married because my mom was pregnant. They divorced, where I don't really have any memories of them being together. Got a great stepdad when I was 4. We lived with my grandparents until then, who are also amazing. Love that I lived with them. And so it was actually difficult for me to do that work because I'm like, well, I don't know, my life was great. But there's always little things, and trauma shows up in different ways. I know that there was ancestral trauma. My whole dad's side was healing. He had 7 siblings, and when he was 18, his dad killed his mom and committed suicide and then blamed him because my dad would try to stick up for her and try to fight back. And so the suicide note left him a dollar. So I grew up going to NA and AA meetings with my dad, hearing him tell his testimony, knowing that that's what I came from. And then my mom's side had never really gone through anything. And so they never really did any work. They're all about the medications and the numbing and all of that stuff. And so we also grew up very Christian. It never really felt fully aligned. I felt like there was some sort of spirituality to me, but there was just contradictions I couldn't really figure out. And so I was always just the outsider. I was an only child. I always felt alone. We moved quite a bit. And so for me, I think I was trying to justify why I felt different all the time. And so I was always seeking answers, trying to figure out where I belonged and what felt right. I got some inspiration. My dad would pay me to read books like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens and things like that. And my dad was always kind of the lone wolf off reading while everyone else was camping. And so it's an amalgamation of a lot of different influences. But I think the main thing is I felt alone and different. And so I either was going to internalize that as, oh, there must be something wrong with me, or it was more like seeking to belong, find something that felt right in life
Yep. So when you started on this clean journey, let's talk about that for a second. Like, did you shift anything over? Like, would you call yourself an addict before or no? Like,
oh yeah, like, I was addicted to everything.
So what did you shift that addiction over to something else? Like, it's like a lot of people shift it into working out or this and that, and that can be unhealthy too, or can be healthy, but, or some people just give up addictive personality altogether. Where did you fall into that?
I can see all of that happening. I had to reframe how I thought about myself. And so for a long time, I had that label. I have an addictive personality. I still kind of have that. But what it's shifted into is I'm an intense person. And so if I'm not funneling that energy towards something that I'm passionate about, then it's going to find something else to cling to. And so before I found that passion, yeah, it was shift and shift and shift. And it was really difficult to get out of any of them. It took finding my passion to want to give up alcohol. It took finding love to really feel secure in giving up this cycle of binging and purging that had been ruling my life for 10 years. And so it's an understanding that there's a void. And so if you don't fill the void with something that sets your soul on fire, then that void is probably going to set you on fire.
That's right. Destructive. It's destructive if you get bored, for sure. All right. So podcasting, how did you, when you started your podcast, I mean, I've been through all this myself, right? And I've seen other people. My company doesn't help people with their podcast itself and necessarily like producing it and marketing that. That's not what we do. But like, what would you say for those listening that have a podcast or thinking about starting a podcast that want to get growth as quickly as possible? Like, what are some of the, like, you won that award for the secret marketing, internet marketing thing, right? Like, what are some of your secrets that you could share with people that they could implement?
I was always about finding the most efficient way. That contest that I won was actually, I got all nerdy and using the Firefox browser. This was before there was all this privacy settings everywhere. I was helping my friend launch her sports bra line. And so I joined all these Facebook groups and made all the, like, actually friend requested a bunch of people, found out there was a Grease Monkey Chrome extension that allowed you to add scripts to websites. And basically I could scrape everybody's phone number from my Facebook friends list. And then I used Google Voice and another Grease Monkey script to send mass but individual text messages through Google Voice. That was actually just messaging people saying, hey, we're in this Facebook group together. Hope you don't mind. I reached out and then like showed them this bra on it. And so that's what won. It was like this black hat marketing trick that is no longer possible. But I always had this idea of like, okay, what's a better way? This is what everyone's teaching. If I Google how to grow a podcast, there's a list of 9 different things on, and they're all exactly the same. What are people not doing? And because I had been in the app world, I still have like 1,000 apps on my phone. I love to just play with them and understand the user experience, see what people are doing. Any growth I've done, I kind of brainwash myself. I've really inundate myself with everything going on so that my mind just starts to see the patterns. And so I first had to figure out how to differentiate my show. So I had a plan for the first 20 episodes to really overproduce it. Each episode took me like probably 8 to 16 hours to do because I wasn't good at interviewing yet. So I'd actually really heavily edit and make sure I sounded like a professional. Thank God my husband does websites. So he made my website look really professional, but then I actually would add sound effects to people's stories. Like they throw the keys on the counter and run this car started, like everything they were saying, I would have this background. So check out my first 20 episodes and you'll hear that. And so I knew that this was going to help me stand out in the self-development space. Nobody else was doing that in that space. They were doing it in the storytelling space. So then I thought, well, other than being on other people's shows, which why do people have any reason to bring me on their show at this given moment? Where else can I gain exposure? And so I was thinking, all right, if somebody lists me on an article, but there's more layers of friction there. They have to actually look me up, go to the podcast app. What about when they're already on their phone? That's not going to disrupt them from what they're doing. The only way to do that is to be featured. At the time, Apple wasn't even updating new and noteworthy. And so my app brain was like, well, there's tons of other podcast apps. Let's download them all. I looked for the ones that had their own featured section. And then I reached out. I spent another extra day figuring out how to pitch myself, write the validation that I did have, see what my differentiator was, which was I could, why else would they feature a brand new podcast? Well, this is completely different than anything else in the space. And it adds storytelling, sound effects and things that people just aren't doing. I think people would really love to hear this. And then I saw the growth that it was having, week over week. I was really putting myself out there, just having that unshakable confidence. I see a lot of people launch things and they're like, well, I'm too afraid to talk about it until it actually grows and I feel validated. No, you've got to just brainwash yourself there too. And just go out like, this is what you're doing now and you need support. And so, that was one of the biggest things that helped. I also went to my co-working space, set up a booth. This was the day that I was excited to like tell people all about my show. I wanted to get a bunch of reviews because when I was pitching myself to these apps, I didn't want to look like I had nobody. So I got 100 reviews within the first couple of days. And that was because I sat in that booth. Fires were happening around LA. I was like, oh, no one's going to come to the co-working space. But then I thought, get creative, went to the nearest CVS, bought out all the smoke masks they had, sat in that booth, posted on the WeWork network, come to this booth, free smoke masks. And every time somebody came, I took their phone, created an Apple ID for them, left a review on my own podcast. So like, I did all of the things and really just put everything I had, opened my mind to ideas beyond what I initially had, and just took action on every single one. Ended up getting featured in 4 different podcast apps, and the differentiator, the reviews, all of those things helped my success with that. And then Castbox at the time, my growth, I checked in with them and said, you featured me last week. Thank you so much. This is the growth that I saw. It seems that your audience is really resonating with me. And I'm wondering if I could be featured in another list. They did feature me in another list, but then I had this kind of ongoing friendship with this one contact who featured me, showing her how aligned we were and showing her that their audience loved my content. And then they asked me to be the first Castbox original. And so they ended up featuring me quite often. They changed their business model about 2 years later. And so there were no more Castbox originals at all. But that really helped surge my growth. All of those things did. But it was like how you have to take action. You have to first meet your ideas with action and then meet the next opportunity and the next opportunity. And that door would never have opened for me if I wouldn't have done all of those things before. And so people are like, oh, okay. Well, Castbox featured her. That makes more sense. No, I did like 19 other things before that door even opened. And
stacking, it just stacks and it compounds, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I created the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I love it. I went through this on my journey too, and I look back and I'm like, man, I don't know if I would do all the stuff that I did again. Like you think back at some of that stuff, and it's like, it's just like about the same thing about the person that you were before that got sober. It's like that person had courage. I don't know if I have that same thing anymore. Like, I guess I would if I needed to, but no, this is awesome. And you know, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this. The last thing I want to ask you is, where can people find you and what's the best place? Is it the podcast is where you want to send them, or where do you want to send people?
Yeah. My website is mindlove.com. You can find all of my links there. The podcast is on any of the platforms that you get your podcasts. And my Instagram is mindlovemelissa.
All right, guys, go check out Melissa. She's awesome. As you heard here, she's been on a journey and now she's helping other people as well, which I think is therapy for her. Just like I do. Like, I know I'm helping other people. It's like helps me. So, you know, not to speak for you, Melissa, but thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, hold on, Melissa, as I wind this down. Thank you so much for being here, guys, and paying attention to what we're teaching here. You know, the ingredients to success. And I appreciate you listening or watching, however you're consuming this content. Keep coming back. Like, subscribe, rate. Make sure you add me to list too from this show, just like Melissa did. And we will continue to bring you great guests. Sharing the ingredients to success. Your boy C-Rock. Until next time, signing off from That One Studio and the Woody Madoff Show. Beat That One.
Artlist IO.
Present for that, I feel the pressure. But I like the way this make it extra. I can show my mother making a restaurant.